Again, the spirit of the depth spoke to me and said these words to edify my soul. Childhood has a beauty and is soon gone. With satisfaction we come to adulthood, but it too has a beauty that soon begins to disappear. Soon the harbinger of old age stands at the threshold and beckons us to follow. So one is satiated of life, and the time is ripe for death. We cannot impede our time on this earth, only satisfy every moment by living it fully. Again, the spirit of the time stepped forward to negate the understanding that edifies my soul. The spirit of the times questioned, "Are you sure this is not madness?" This time, I listened to both voices and felt an openness to both listen and to question ideas that filled my head. Ah, you see, my pack of hounds, they were now less inclined to howling and more ready for a proper hunt for the wisdom available for those who venture into the unknown. So it was. Again, I dropped down into that world of the unconscious, into the land of the human soul. And this act of imagination, it brought me again to a wooded area on a hillside overlooking a river valley. Only this time it was spring. The trees had not leafed out. A view was clear before me. Below in the valley, I could see the setting sun had turned the river into a flow of molten gold. The trees around me were alive with the sounds of birds. From the distance, I could hear a chorus of spring peepers. On that river valley below, I could see there was a village next to the river. Feeling tired and hungry, I started down the trail, looking perhaps for a place to spend the night. I came to a village, and there at the edge, there was a building. I could not determine its purpose. It was larger than a private home and more ornate than a house of religious worship, still not as grand as a castle. When I approached the door, I could see that it was open and welcoming to me. I looked about, expecting to meet a denizen of the village who might tell me whether this was a place of lodging, but the village was deserted. I went to the door now, called out a greeting, but there was no answer. I called out a greeting again, yet no answer, and so I entered hesitantly. There I found myself in a kind of vestibule. I called out again, but again no answer. Before me I could see that there were two doors offering further access to the building. I don't know why, but I chose the door on the right. And without announcing myself, I opened it and entered boldly. I came into what appeared to be the reading room of a lending library. The room was quite large, with many books. There was a desk and a man seated behind it. He was thin and pale, and even before he spoke a word, I had a sense of an air of scholarly conceit. He looked up from his book and asked, "What do you want?" I was somewhat embarrassed because I had no real answer. I looked down at the floor and shifted my body, and then words came out of my mouth without my reckoning. I said, Nah, I think I'd like Thomas A. Kempis, The Imitation of Christ. He looked at me, somewhat astonished, as if he could not imagine me reading this book. Nevertheless, he called to a young man to get the book. Now, I must admit to you that I was irritated with this scholarly man and his conceit, and I was spoiling for an opportunity to bring him down a peg or two. And so I said, "Are you surprised that I request a Thomas book?" He looked at me and said, "Well, I would not have expected one of your kind." Then he paused and said, "I mean, being religious, that is." I said in return, "Well, I do value science, that is for certain. But there are actually times when science leaves me empty. At times like that, the Thomas book, it means very much to me, for it is written from the soul." The man looked askance. "But it's so old-fashioned, so full of Christian dogmatism, so religious." I responded, "For myself, I have found in life that irreligious people who have gained a modicum of education tend to be as dogmatic as any religious person you'll meet on the street." Luckily, at this juncture, the assistant had arrived with a copy of the Thomas book. I thanked the young man and left the library before they could inquire about my proper library privilege. Back in the vestibule, I thought to continue outside until my eyes glanced to the right and fell upon the second door. Well, I must tell you, I could not resist the temptation to discover what kind of intriguing mystery would lay behind it. With bold anticipation, I did not hesitate this time. I opened the door and went into the second room. Now, by all rights, you might have expected it to be another room related to the library. But you know, when you release the hounds of imagination into the world to explore the meaning of soul, the most interesting and unexpected discoveries result. I found myself walking into a room that was completely the opposite of the musty book room. The smell of baking bread filled my nostrils as I came into a kitchen equal to the size of the library. On the outside wall of the kitchen was a large brick oven with a chimney. On the other side, there were iron and copper pots and pans hanging on hooks. In the middle of the room, there were two wooden tables with benches. And there, as I came into the room, I could see there was the cook. She was a plump, rather red-faced woman, and she was busily taking out baked loaves of bread from the oven. When she saw me standing just inside the door, she smiled and spoke without guile. "You look starved. Come sit down. Enjoy some of my fresh baked bread on the table." I must tell you, this genuine and earthy invitation, so different from the last, it was received without reservation. I sat down and enjoyed a large slice of hot bread with a generous slab of creamy yellow butter to gild my taste buds. The cook went on with her work for a while, but I noticed that she kept looking at me. I took out my Thomas book and started to read. Then she called to me, and she said, "Excuse me, sir, are you perhaps a priest?" I said, "No, not me. Why do you ask?" she responded. "Oh, it's nothing except that when my dear mother died, the priest carried such a book with him. He read from it to comfort her as she came to her end on this earth." I smiled, and she turned back to her work, and for a while I read the Thomas book. And then I found myself suddenly feeling tired and a little sleepy in this warm and pleasant kitchen. And do you know, like a schoolboy exhausted from a day of playing outdoors, I laid my head down on the table, on that wooden table, and fell fast asleep. So it was. In this story of imagination, I found myself going deeper into the unconscious. And now I found myself standing inside a school, or perhaps a small church. It was springtime, and a window was open in the church. Suddenly, in a tree outside the window, I saw a flock of blackbirds land. They seemed in an agitated, fluttering here and about. I listened to their squawking and thought, "My God, I can understand their language. It has human characteristics. And their features, they look almost human, these blackbirds." On an intuitive impulse, I called out, "Who are you? Where are you going?" One of the blackbirds answered me and said, "We're dead Christians. Dead Christians going to the Holy Land, but we've lost the way. We've lost our way. Can you help us? Can you help us?" Again on impulse, I responded without thinking, and I said, "Oh my, yes. Yes, I can help you. You see, you've lost your animal soul. That's why you can't find your way." As suddenly as these lost souls had appeared, they hurried off towards the east, and I turned back to the inside of the church, and I saw two men standing there watching me talking with a flock of blackbirds. One of the men said to me, "To whom were you speaking?" Sheepishly, I drew my Thomas book to my chest and said, "A band of dead Christians headed to the Holy Land. At least I think." "Ah," said the man, "symptoms, symptoms of hallucinations and hearing voices. What is that you have in your hand?" I looked down now at my hands, and I said, "Oh, it's my Thomas a Kempis, and my invitation of Christ." "Ah," now the man shook his head and said to his partner, "Now there you have it. A form of religious madness, yes, perfectly clear, an example of paranoia." Do you know, at that moment, I felt a gentle hand on my shoulder. And it was the cook's voice waking me. "Wake up, sir. Wake up. You must be having a bad dream." I looked at her, and I felt so happy, so happy to be back in that warm and good-smelling world of the cook, and not to be carried off to some mental hospital for my craziness, my madness. Still, I felt a little groggy from my sleep, and I stood up and looked at the cook, and then finally spoke. I thanked her for the bread, and I decided it was time for me to leave. And so I left that kitchen, and I could hear her behind me still singing the praises of the Thomas book that had been read at her mother's deathbed. So as I closed the kitchen door gently and turned to leave the building, I remembered, well, that library, perhaps I'd better take the Thomas book back to the library. The cook might need it. She might want to take it out when she comes to the end of her life. So it was I opened the door and went back into the library. It had not changed. The man was still sitting at the desk where I left him. I walked up to him, and I said, "I've come to return the Thomas A. Kempis book. I had a chance to read it while visiting in the kitchen next door." The man's smile had not changed from its look of misplaced confidence. "Well," he said, "I'm happy that the cook looked after your needs." I answered back, "Well, I certainly cannot complain about the reception. I had a wonderful sleep over the Thomas book." The man, he shook his head. "Well, that does not surprise me. Prayer books are always boring." I looked at him and I said, "The cook does not agree with you. The cook does not agree. She considers it a very edifying book." "Well, what would you expect from a cook?" said the librarian with disdain. I gently laid the Thomas book down on his desk, and I turned to leave, but over my shoulder I made a simple suggestion. "You might profit by spending more time in that kitchen next door. Perhaps an imaginative sleep or two would awaken the animal soul in your scholar's body." So ended my second lesson in a primer for the education of a mind in search of a soul.